first developing their distinctive culture was the Archaic period. It was the period when they colonized the Mediterranean, when they made the first steps towards democracy, when they acquired their alphabet from the Eastern Mediterranean and so forth. And then, according to Droysen, in the Classical Age, the Greeks reached the height of their civilization. This was the age of Pericles, the age of Socrates, the age of the Athenian Empire, of the Parthenon, of Greek philosophy, of Greek tragedy, written by Aeschylus and Sophocles and Euripides. And in this model of three phases of civilization, according to Droysen, the last phase was the Hellenistic, deriving its name from the Greek word for Greece, in fact, Hellas. This Hellenistic phase was supposedly the decadent phase, the period that came after the Classical Age when the Greeks were at their height. Well, we still use these distinctions as far as periods are concerned. We still talk about archaic and classical and Hellenistic. But I'm hoping that this course of lectures will persuade you that it is entirely wrong to think of the Hellenistic age as a period of decadence or decline. It isn't the period during which the Greeks lose their genius. Rather, it is the dynamic period of Greek history when, in fact, Greek civilization is spread over a much broader canvas than ever before. This is the first thing that I want to introduce in our study of the Hellenistic Age. It is a period during which the scale of Greek culture is unlike anything that has come before. Prior to this, the Greek world has been essentially mainland Greece, the Aegean, the western coast of Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey, and some Greek colonies further west in, say, Sicily. But now, thanks to Alexander and his conquests, Greek civilization will be spread across an entirely new canvas, so that Greek armies following Alexander will march from Macedon all the way to the Hindu Kush, to the Indus Valley, and to the Punjab Plain of northwest India. This is dramatically new. If you think about the modern nation-states, which in antiquity, during which their regions would have been part of the Hellenistic world, one finds an extraordinary list. One could include Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Egypt, Libya, Arabia, one could include Iraq and Iran, and what was formerly known as Persia, and also Afghanistan. All these areas now are areas which now, during the 3rd century BC down to the 1st century BC, were brought into the Greek world. They received Greek culture as Greek colonists following Alexander came and settled here. So it is a period that is one of completely new scale for Greek culture. And as the scale increases, so does the presentation of power in the Greek world. Everything gets larger. It is like Greek culture on steroids. In the classical world, the Greeks had used triremes, war boats that had three banks of oars. Now in the Hellenistic period, we'll find naval battles where the ships have banks of 5 oars, or 10, or 15 banks of oars. Everything is getting larger and larger. And it will be a period also where we'll see a great deal of anxiety as people begin to worry about their place in the world, because the old certainties have now been shattered. A world in which people will explore the psychology of the individual in the Greek novel and in Greek epic poems, in which the torment of the individual will be expressed in Greek art, as we're going to see later in these lectures. A period during which Greek philosophers will be concerned with the question of establishing inner harmony and peace as they deal with the anxiety of this new age. And, because it's an age of anxiety, also an age in which people turn more and more towards astronomy, and astrology, and casting spells and using magic to control their lives and the lives of other people. So it's going to be a Greek world or a Greek culture that's unlike anything that we've seen before in the classical or the archaic periods. And looming over all of this is one man, Alexander, Alexander the Great. Now, Alexander's accomplishments, which we're going to look at in the next couple of lectures, would not have been possible but for the fact that his father conquered Greece. And so we have to begin even before Alexander in this, the first lecture of our series, with Philip II, the king of Macedon. When we look at Macedon, we find that the relationship between Macedon and Greece is a highly complex